Welcome. When you're English and you came here via a link via Natalie, welcome to this podcast, which is normally in Dutch, and I will do a short Dutch intro, so keep hanging on, because the interview will be on in a bit. Hallo en welkom bij aflevering 104 van de N. Honning Show, waar het draait om hoe je online meer resultaat boekt voor jouw bedrijf, hoe je als ondernemer online gebruikt voor meer klanten en omzet. Mijn naam is Enno Hanink en ik neem ondernemers met een team het werk uit handen voor online resultaat, meer klanten en meer omzet binnen een jaar. Vandaag het gesprek met Natalie Nahai. Okay, switching to English now. Natalie is a web psychologist, international speaker and author of the best-selling book Webs of Influence, Psychology of Online Persuasion. The foremost expert in web psychology, Natalie helps businesses apply scientific rigor to their website design, content marketing, and products. She has worked for Fortune 500. She has worked with Fortune 500 companies, design agencies, and SMEs, including Google, eBay, Unilever, and Harvard Business Review, to name a few. Natalie lectures internationally on the digital application of behavioral sciences, hosts Guardian podcasts, and contributors to national publications, TV and radio on the subject of online behavior. This was a great conversation with Natalie, which lasted a bit longer than my usual podcast. That's why I've cut it in two pieces, so it is going to be two episodes, and this is part one. I hope you enjoy the views of Natalie as I did. It is a great conversation, so let's get the show rolling.
Welkom in de Erno Hanning Show, de podcast waar je meer leert over de online kant van jouw coachingsbedrijf. Praktische tips die je helpen om vandaag jouw bedrijf online zichtbaar te maken.
Hey, hello Natalie.
Hello Erno, how are you?
Yeah, great, and you?
Very well, thank you.
You're living in Barcelona, huh?
Yes, I am for the time being, just having a little break from the craziness of conferences.
Yeah. I can imagine. Sometimes it must be very hectic with all the travel and everything.
yeah, it can.
But I think the most important part that we're going to talk about today, and I think that was hectic as well, is your book, your new book.
Yeah.
Well, cool. I'd say a new book. It's an update of your original very good book.
Thanks.
The Webs of Influence.
Yeah.
So, I think if you listen right now, you cannot buy it. You must buy it. I mean, you cannot not buy it. That's what I meant to say. I mean, it's filled with information that you want to use on your website, in your social media, in your videos, in your emails, whatever you do online. It has a lot of tips, very practical tips, you know, how you can use this now, case studies. It's filled. So you know, start with chapter one and just use some of the stuff and just continue that way. Natalie.
Yeah.
One of the most important parts that I do is when I look at a new client or look at my own field, what I do is I'm telling them, you know, focusing on a target audience is not the best way to look at it, because then you have this really broad audience and you not really know exactly who they are. So I tell them to just look at one person.
Yeah.
So that you can actually, you know who they are, you can talk to them, you can chat with them, you can ask them questions, and then you can learn so much about them. And especially when you talk to them, you can learn what words they are using, what kind of language they are using, and use that language in your conversation, in your communication from that on.
Yeah. Well, I think that's a really smart thing to suggest in that it's really good to know one's audience. And there's a huge amount of research that has looked at the power of persuasive communication and when communication is at its most persuasive. And typically, if someone's trying to encourage us to take an action or to think something or buy something or whatever it might be, we're much more likely to believe what they say, to trust them and to respond in a positive way if we feel that they are similar to ourselves. So it's this principle of homophily, our love of the same. And so if you're using words or even things like, you know, if you're creating videos, you're using clothes or slang or people who look like the audience you're trying to reach, and you have a very clear idea of who that audience is, and say you have a friend that really typifies the characteristics of your audience, then of course it makes great sense to understand what the words are that are going to be the most engaging for those people, and then to use that directly in your research. And this is something, of course, that you can split test.
But this is also mean that you can learn the words, but they are also attracted to you, especially when you are a one person business.
Absolutely, I think so. I mean, I think if you're working, well, I'm a one person kind of business in a sense, mm-hmm. I suppose. And what I've found is that if you're passionate about what you do and you target what you do, like I know that you suggest, so that you're really delivering high level service for people who are specifically interested in the thing that you can bring, then you're going to develop much more loyal customers who can only get that specific thing from you. And then over time, of course, the relationship develops and you develop an affinity with that person, you build trust. And so people are much more likely to want to continue working with you. And the other thing, of course, that's really nice about that relationship is that if you are a small business and you get to have these sorts of relationships with your clients, then over time you can further develop the product or the service that you're offering simply by getting to know their needs, their desires and their wants and the issues that they're dealing with and how better to solve them as time goes by. So, yeah, I mean, it's primary research. It's great research.
I think also at the same time, it's very difficult for an entrepreneur to choose this. I mean, it comes very close to you. You connect with people that you really like, and they connect with you because they like you. Like you said, love of the same. They feel similar. But when I ask them to choose for a specific target client, it's very difficult for them because then they have to also let go of some stuff.
Yeah, I think the letting go and the changing things is always difficult in any kind of field of life. So being able to relinquish a client, for instance, that maybe pays quite well, but you're not going to have a long-term commitment with, might be the right thing to do, but it's going to be a painful thing to do. And I think it's a question of finding the right way to balance your needs. So how much you want to work with people who are going to help you to develop the product and the service, the people that you're going to want to work with, who are nice to you, the people who have maybe similar or shared values. It is tricky as an entrepreneur, but I think the nice thing about it is that you are over time building something based on your interests, your needs, you're doing it on your own terms. And although that flexibility isn't there right at the very beginning, because you're having to build, you're having to attract clients, it's a lot of hard work. The freedom and flexibility that comes with it is just extraordinary.
How do you make that choosing the right client for you? How do you make that easier? Where do you start? What would you suggest?
That's a really interesting question. I think when I think about the clients that I most enjoy working with, who've actually been the best in the long term to work with, these are people who are extremely interested and curious in the similar things that I'm curious about. So in terms of web psychology, it will be things like personality, for instance, or it could be persuasion principles. And there's an aligned interest to discover more, and there's a willingness to collaborate as well. So I think if you're a small business and you are looking to find more clients that you're going to build your business with, if they're going to form the foundations for your clientele, you need to find the ones that you're most going to enjoy working with and who are also going to be able to go on that journey with you to help flag up when there's something that they need that maybe you don't have, but they trust your expertise so that you can bring that in and you can do some extra research and build that out for them. I think aligned interests and shared values are extremely important. And then also businesses that are going to be able to execute on what you deliver. And this is a really tough thing as an entrepreneur. If you're delivering something to a business and they're then not able to use what it is that you've given them, or they're unwilling to use it, that's going to be frustrating for you as an entrepreneur and frustrating for the business. And it can be quite a common issue that arises. So find businesses that are actually going to use what you have to offer, and it'll be much more fulfilling.
That's a great point, because I've just switched, let's say about 2 years ago, my audience, because I've noticed that my ambition for them was bigger than their own ambition. So that had a lot to do with what you're saying. They were not willing to execute what we learned in the sessions.
And it's surprisingly common, actually, because we all have this as a foible. We all kind of think, well, it'd be nice if someone can just wave a magic wand and make it happen easily. But of course, things rarely happen that way. And so if there isn't a willingness to do the hard work and to be humble and to learn from one's mistakes, then it becomes very difficult. So how did you solve it in the end?
Well, I've just changed my target clients to a smaller group to make it even smaller. Mm-hmm. And I've looked at the people who are already, you know, have ambitions that are similar to mine, and want to grow and want to do the work for that.
Yeah, but it's amazing because they make the knowledge that you give them work so much more, and they take it so much further. So then you presumably get good feedback, and you can grow together, and that's the joy of it, I think.
I agree. Mm. So you talked about values as a part of that too. So do you, for example, write down, or is that maybe a suggestion you would just give, write down the values of yourself and then look in those values in the clients that you meet?
Yeah, so it could be things like, you know, why did you start your business? Why are you best placed to offer this kind of service? What kind of needs do you think you're helping people to fulfill? What's the biggest problem you're helping people to solve? What's unique about what you do? And although these may sound like quite basic questions, we tend to do things, especially when we're setting up our own businesses, we tend to do things because we have a passion for them and an interest for them. And if you can somehow find the values that connect them, or maybe it's your personal story that connects them, it's going to make a much more compelling narrative when you're selling to businesses or you're trying to sell to businesses and you're saying, well, this is why I do what I do. This is my motivation for wanting to help you. Because we all respond much more strongly to stories than we do to facts. And so if you can create that emotional quality to your approach and to your background and why you do what you do, then it's also going to be more persuasive.
How deep do you need to go? How narrow does it need to be, do you think?
Oh, well, I think you can go as deep as you want to. I mean, if you look at some of the brands like, I'm trying to think now, Zappos shoes, for instance, or trying to think of some other ones. You might look at any of the B Corp companies in the States. So a lot of companies now have got kind of manifestos that they'll put front and center of the business that they create, and they'll let clients go if it doesn't start to match up with what they've decided they want as a value system for their company. And I think you can go, as long as you've got maybe two or three things in there and you really believe in what it is, in the values that you have, I think you can go fairly simply. Some people are quite straightforward, and others like to go really far. I suppose it depends on the kind of personality that you have and how much you want to expand into it.
Mm-hmm. So now a new visitor comes on your website, and they land on your website. And how do you give them a clear vision of who you help best and you know, what is your mission and how do you do things and what's your story? How do you bring that, make that clear to them as fast as you can?
Well, so typically the fastest way to communicate anything online is through image. And I have to say here, there's this trend at the moment, not just for full width images, but specifically for full width videos. And I know it's culture specific. It's still going on in the US, the UK. I wonder if people are starting to stop. But basically, when you have a lot of motion on a landing page in particular, if it's quite strong motion, it's going to distract from any other important information, including calls to action that are on the page. So I would say if you're going to try and communicate information, it can be tempting to try and use a video to convey as much as possible. But actually, what you really probably need is a really beautiful high-res photo, photo of something that's authentic. So if you may be working with your clients, and maybe the eye gaze is pointing towards the call to action so that people can see where they need to go, I'd say there should be a high contrast sans serif font strap line that says exactly what it is that you do in very concrete terms, and then a single call to action. Maybe it's give us your email or find out more. And then if people want to scroll down, you can include maybe a video for people to watch if they want to go into that level of depth. But essentially, the less visual clutter that you have, the simpler the words, the higher the contrast of the words against the background. And if you're going to use any images, use an image and not videos. that's kind of a good place to start. And from there, you can then test which components work better by switching out different headlines and different photos, etc.
Wow. So you're describing my ideal homepage. So that's how, I see so many homepages of people that I speak and look into that are just, you know, there's so much information on that people, when they land on that homepage or any landing page on the website in general, is that they be overwhelmed with the information. There's so much choice. There's so many call to actions that you have no idea what you need to do as a visitor.
Yeah, and it just overburdens people. It's called, well, cognitive load is the amount of mental effort that we work, that we use in our working memory to figure out what's happening, in this case, on landing pages. And if you add loads of clutter and loads of information and loads of motion, it's going to up the cognitive load, which means your clients are making much more effort and they're much more likely to bounce away because you're not creating an easy experience for them.
Right. I'm looking at your homepage, and I think it's a great example. You have a photo of you on stage. We have the audience, which is, you know, kind of dark, and so you don't see too many faces. But you can see it's a big audience, and you are looking towards the audience. And also, it kind of ends up looking at the call to action on this page, this model. That's the subscription. So you need to subscribe in this box here, and there's a big blue button, sign up. You have the option of seeing and looking at previous newsletters, and at the bottom you have a video of you, which doesn't autoplay, but you can look at it, and it tells you more about who you are, and you get a glimpse of interviews and stage presence, what you do. So it gives a really good idea of what you do and how you help people.
Thanks.
I think it's so simplistic. It's not really the right word, but it's empty. It's clear. It's concise. So it's a very good example, I think, that most homepages would look like. But you have a huge photo at the top, right?
Mm-hmm.
I see now a number of people that I've looked into their websites that I'm doing these weekly case studies and look into on the website and check out what they do. And I see that they have a video right there, a short video that plays in the background, and it has a similar video like you, image like you, and they have an audience, they speak and they walk and they do all this stuff. Do you think that, and I think testing is probably the best way of course to find out, but do you think that an image in this situation, and you explain it, but I think it's important to just really pay attention
unpack
to this.
Yeah.
Then just a video in the background?
Well, I think, as I hear you say a lot, and you're absolutely right, one should split test everything. I think it's totally fine to have a video in the background, but don't make it autoplaying. Because the other thing, of course, that you have to realize is that if people are looking at this at work, if they don't have their headphones in, if their sound is up, if they're looking at your webpage through a different device, which is most of the time people are going to just, you know, use their mobiles, or if they're in bed, it might be a tablet. It's much easier to control what people experience if you have fewer variables that can go wrong. So unless you've got a robust website where the video doesn't autoplay, where it's just there and it's a clear action button which says play, I mean, they're still going to have to click on it. If that's the call to action, is just to play the video, then that's fine. But that means that whatever the other call to action is, which is going to be sign up or book me now or buy my book, whatever it is, that's going to be another click away. So it depends on what your goal is, and it depends on how you want people to interact with you. It also comes down to personal preference. I think in terms of the way that I like to work, I like to practice what I preach. I like my design to be simple. I like people to be able to feel like they can discover what they want as they want to through the site. And for everything to be nice and clear, the information architecture to be super simple. Because then it creates a really stress-free experience, and the person feels like they're in greater control. If you rob people of the control by having auto-playing videos or GIFs, etc., then it can actually feel quite chaotic, and that's not the kind of experience that I think is necessarily going to provide a good reaction.
Thank you to listening to this interview, this talk with Natalie. I will finish up in Dutch again, so make sure you are back on the second episode on this interview, and you will look at my website, ernhoning.nl, to find it. Dat was het bijzondere gave gesprek met Natalie. En dit was deel 1. Zoals ik al net al zei in het Engels, het is opgeknipt in 2 delen. Dit was deel 1.
En je vindt de namen en links die Nathalie noemde in het artikel dat bij deze uitzending hoort. Ga daarvoor naar ernohanning.nl/show104. Vergeet niet te abonneren op de Erno Hanning Show via iTunes, Stitcher of SoundCloud, want dan krijg je elke aflevering vanzelf in je earbuds, in jouw oorplugjes. Vind je dit nou een gave aflevering? Vind je een leuk gesprek met Nathalie? Doe mij een groot plezier en alle mensen om mij heen een plezier, zoals Justin die deze podcast edit. En laat zien dat je van deze podcast houdt door een bijvoorbeeld gave 5-sterren beoordeling te geven op iTunes. Het helpt mij echt enorm. Ga daarvoor naar iTunes, zoek op de Erno Hanning Show. Klik op de 5-sterren, doe een korte omschrijving waarom je het zo gaaf vindt en je doet mij enorm plezier. Heb je nu vragen over deze aflevering, over de podcast in het algemeen? Stuur dan een e-mail naar podcast@ernohanning.nl en ik hoor heel graag van jou. Kom maar op. Wil jij nou weten hoe jij dit soort dingen, dit soort elementen van deze aflevering toepast in jouw online acties, hoe je meer resultaat krijgt? Vraag dan een online resultaatanalyse aan bij mij en je leert hoe jouw bedrijf meer klanten en omzet kan krijgen met online. Vraag die nu aan en boek het, want mijn agenda is voor deze maand volgens mij zelfs vol. Maar kom erop op onlineresultaatanalyse.nl. Ik zie je graag in de volgende aflevering in deel 2 van dit gesprek met Nathalie. Tot snel.
Dankjewel voor het luisteren naar de Erno Hanning Show op ernohanning.nl.